you hate Wikipedia. I just got a spoiler about what a Vorlon looks like.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say.
It was the dawn of the third age of mankind, 10 years after the Earth-Minbari War. The Babylon Project was a dream given form. Its goal, to prevent another war by creating a place where humans and aliens could work out their differences peacefully. It's a port of call, home away from home for diplomats, hustlers, entrepreneurs, and wanderers. Humans and aliens wrapped in 2,500,000 tons of spinning metal, all alone in the night. It can be a dangerous place, but it's our last best hope for peace. This is the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2258. The name of the place is Babylon 5.
Hey, welcome to Anomaly Supplemental. I'm Sarah, and this is going to be my review on Babylon 5 Season 1. I was kind of hoping to do a review on the series as an entirety, but that was a little too ambitious, and Netflix took down the entire series for instant play. I pretty much just had to finish Season 1. The only thing I knew about it was that Claudia Christian was in it. She was at Con Carolinas like 2 years ago. And that was listed among her credits, so I was like, oh yeah, she's in that. And that there's a guy in it with weird hair. Exactly how I used to own, the only thing I used to know about Farscape was that there's a blue lady in it. Sometimes you just know the weird facts about a show. I was going to ask for comments, what people thought about Babylon 5 as a whole, and decided, you know what? I wanted to remain untainted, quote unquote, and not have anybody's thoughts possibly influence what I thought about the show. I really wanted this to be a really honest look at the show, and I really thought it would be interesting to go into it being a DS9 fan and just watching it without any preconceived notions. Some people might say that that's not possible if you're a DS9 fan, but I have to say, I like DS9 a lot, but I really didn't know anything about this whole DS9, Babylon 5 rivalry thing going. And so I really wouldn't count myself among those people who would form an opinion of the show based on anything to do with that kind of stuff, since I don't really know what it was all about. I'm definitely going to do some more research into it now that I've actually watched the show, though. So, here goes. I started out watching the TV movie The Gathering, which is the pilot. Wasn't really super hooked. I thought there was a lot of really boring parts. Actually, even now, I can't really remember that much about what it was about. Basically watched that, then moved straight on. Was kind of shocked at the change in the makeup quality and some of the actors that they couldn't get back for the second episode. I mean, which is normal. And also kind of glad that they didn't just choose totally different actors and try to pass them off as the same characters. Although, I have to say, in The Gathering the movie, I believe the Lieutenant Commander, instead of Claudia Christian's character, Susan Ivanova, I think her name is Laurel Takashimi. She like has this thing where she's growing her own coffee, which was really dumb because she was going on and on about how she's Miss, oh, I stick to the rules, oh, I don't do anything wrong. And then you're like, you're illegally growing coffee. Some would say that's not sticking to the rules, but however you want to see it. So I watched this other episode. I can't remember which one it was. And they carried over that whole growing illegal coffee with Ivanova's character. So that really confused me, because I was like, okay, that would make sense if the lady in the pilot movie was supposed to be the same character, but she wasn't. So what did she just like be like, oh, well, I'm leaving, but here's my illegal coffee plant. Perhaps she did. Maybe it's tradition. Anyway, that kind of bugged me. Another thing that was a little off-putting and still is throughout Season 1 is the special effects. Specifically, their disruptor effects and when any time we're outside in space and seeing ships, pretty atrocious, no offense, but when you see the model work in a lot of other shows, I'm not naming any names, CGI is great and all, but I feel like there's got to be a balance of CGI and practical effects. And this is straight up CGI, and it's very low level. It takes you back a little bit. That said, I was really very impressed with the makeup. It was kind of weird how much the makeup changed from the pilot movie to the next episode. But I have to say that looking past that, the makeup was still really, really amazing. And another thing that I really liked about the show was that there was so many aliens. You see aliens in every other shot. There's so many different aliens. It's not like with DS9, how basically it's like, oh, you'll probably see a Ferengi, you'll probably see a Bajoran, and then you might see some other alien who just looks like a human with a weird nose, you know? There are aliens everywhere, and they're really good looking. Specifically, in the one episode, I think it's TKO, which, by the way, if you ever saw the movie Arena with Claudia Christian in it, it's basically the same thing, which I thought was kind of funny. You find out it's a carrion eater, but it looks like an Ood, like a better looking Ood from Doctor Who. But I was really impressed. And I forget, Legacies. The episode Legacies of Babylon 5, which actually turned out to be one of my favorite episodes of season one. You get to see one close up and talking. And the makeup might have been assisted slightly with CGI, like his tentacles. It was really cool. I really feel like whoever did the makeup for this show was phenomenal. It just made the show that much more enjoyable. I want to see diversity. I don't only want to just see boring human aliens. I want to see, like, cool aliens. Like, cool aliens. I wanted to give a shout out to whoever it was who did the makeup, but cannot find it at this time. But whoever you are, Gemini Award. Speaking of characters, I have to say that was one of the things that kept me watching even after the first couple episodes. Let's face it, most first seasons are not really that great. I really don't know that I've seen a first season of a show and been like, yeah, that was where they had it. You know what I mean? Which is understandable because that's when the writers are figuring out the characters. That's going to be where most of the changes are. No one has a handle on anything and they're just kind of writing all over the place. The first half of season one was kind of boring. What kept me watching was the characters. I had some early favorites. I really liked Delenn, who is played by Mira Furlan. Most of you would know her as Rousseau from Lost. I was like, why does that girl's voice sound so familiar? And then when I saw her name, I'm like, oh yeah, duh. She's a Minbari, by the way. She was just really enjoyable to watch. My other favorite character so far was Jakar, who is a Narn. He's one of those characters where he's kind of bad, but he's like really funny. You can't help but like him, even though he's totally smarmy and he probably would sell his grandmother, you know, for some kind of an advantage.
We have no telepaths among my people. A genetic oversight, I suppose. One which you could help correct. I am empowered to compensate you quite handsomely for your genetic background. The process would be either a direct mating, you and I, or a donation of vital cells from which we could clone a replicant. Yes, obviously, the cloning is less efficient since we have to grow the clone, so payment would have to be proportionately smaller, and we'd still have to fuse your genes with our own, and that would take even longer. The direct mating is far more cost-effective.
I think the interesting thing about the Narn, they kind of have like the warrior type stance of the Klingon, you know, the honor, but they are really, no offense Klingons, they're really sophisticated, especially the character of Jakar. It's just a really interesting juxtaposition of personality traits, and he carries it off perfectly. I think it's Andreas Katsoulis. I really liked him from the beginning. I did not think I was going to like Ivanova. I really did not think I was going to like her. I thought she was going to be one note, but she's a very interesting character. She is kind of prickly on the outside, but she's got a good sense of humor.
And just one more thing. On your trip back, I'd like you to take the time to learn the Babylon 5 mantra. Ivanova is always right. I will listen to Ivanova. I will not ignore Ivanova's recommendations. Ivanova is God. And if this ever happens again, Ivanova will personally rip your lungs out. Babylon Control out. Civilians. You're just kidding about that God part. No offense.
She opens up just enough to have friends. You know, you're not getting the full Susan Ivanova, but it's one of those things where you know there's more that they're going to be able to do with her character. She's still kind of closed, but you don't like her any less because of that. She's a Russian Jew, and she's still a practicing Jew to some extent. In Star Trek, God has become science. That's all there is to it. You know what I mean? There are some questions, but so I thought this was interesting. You know, having old Earth, quote-unquote, religions playing a part in a character. I thought that was really interesting. I really didn't like Sinclair, who is the commander of Babylon 5. It kind of works for him now, but he kind of has this like 50s dad thing where he says everything and you really wouldn't think it was weird if he like gave you a thumbs up and a wink and called everybody like little Johnny or Billy or something like that. It's very weird. He's almost like a 50s B-movie character. I kind of was annoyed that they made his character kind of a jack of all trades in the beginning, kind of like he knew how to do everything. You could talk anyone down from a ledge. You could do everything. But by the second half of the first season, I really started liking him, and now I think he's a cool character. Also, Garibaldi, who's the chief of security, very likable character. He could easily be annoying because sometimes he's a little gruff, but then you just start to like that. But most of the time, he's just like a joker and, you know, kind of everybody's friend. And I really like him. I think he's a good character. I don't really know that there's any characters I don't like, except for, sorry, Talia Winters, the telepath. I really like very few telepathic characters because they cannot write telepathic characters to save their lives. Either telepathic character is a disturbed, crazy person who's constantly going through people's minds and enjoying it and invading people's privacy left and right and using it to their own advantage, or they're major victims who whine about everything and are all wimpy and afraid and the voices, oh, there's too many voices. And she's the latter, unfortunately. Very whiny. I feel like every time we see her, she's talking about some traumatic thing that happened because of her telepathic abilities and everything, including a really awkward scene in which she talks about when two telepaths are making love to Sinclair. And I was just like, this is really too much information. I understand you're trying to get across a point, but I really don't think you know him well enough to be telling him all of this detail. I have to say, of all the characters, I really do not like her, but I'm willing to give her a chance. I'm willing to see if maybe she'll grow on me in season two. Londo, who is another ambassador, the four ambassadors, Jakar and Delenn, and one I haven't talked about yet. But Londo is a Centauri, and he's the guy with the big hair that I always saw. I didn't think I was going to like him either, actually. I thought he was going to be annoying, and he's really funny, and he's one of the only characters that actually makes me laugh out loud when I'm by myself.
I think I'll stick my head in the station's fusion reactor. It would be quicker, and I suspect after a while I might even come to enjoy it.
Ambassador, why don't
but
you
this is like being nibbled to death by, what are those earth creatures called? Feathers, long bill, webbed feet. Go quack.
Cats.
Being nibbled to death by cats.
Did you ever notice that it's easier to laugh out loud when someone's with you, but when you're by yourself, you just like smile and you don't really laugh out loud? Or is that just me? I don't know. I really like him. He's a really fun character. He's more of like the Quark type, where it's like he wants to do the right thing sometimes, but sometimes he's really just after the, you know, him angle. He wants to know what's in it for him. But most of the time he does the right thing. Don't really like the Doctor character. I liked him, but then I saw the episode Believers. It was about two parents who brought in their child, and he was suffering from what they were calling watery breathing. The doctor found out, oh, you just need a simple procedure to get rid of this and he'll be fine. But their religion is that, oh, you know, children of the egg cannot be cut into because that's what you do with food animals. So therefore, you know, of course, controversy ensues as it's a matter of religion over medicine, and and all this stuff. So it was an interesting episode. It posed some interesting questions, but I don't think it did Dr. Franklin any favors, frankly.
I didn't really like it, and he was kind of a big, huge jerk in it. So I don't really like him so much, but I also, you know, there's a couple of times when he's starting to grow on me, so it's possible he could redeem himself. That's actually a good segue in storylines. The first half, like I said, was a little weak. Kind of stories I felt like had been done. There were some that I liked, but I really didn't start really thinking, oh, I could watch this episode again until the second half. I didn't start liking episodes until after episode 14, TKO. Actually, an interesting note is two of the episodes were written by DC Fontana, who is a Star Trek veteran story writer. She wrote my favorite episode so far of season one, which was Legacies.
Legacies was a very interesting storyline, basically highlighting the difference between the Minbari that are of the peaceful caste versus the ones that are of the warrior caste. Basically, there's a pacifist side and a fighter side. So that was really interesting, getting to know a little bit more of the background of the Minbari and kind of their motivation for the way they do things. I think it was a really good showcase for Delenn's character, just a very interesting character development, and also for the Minbari themselves, an interesting development for their species and getting us to understand more what they're all about.
The Minbari are a very interesting alien species. I really like their design. One thing I didn't notice until I watched, you know, was almost done watching the series was that the female Minbari have, you won't know what I'm talking about unless you know what they look like, so you're going to have to look it up. But they have, like, almost like, you know, like Lobo from, or Lobot, I always say Lobo, like he's French. Lobot from Star Wars, so he's got, like, the head thing, like the metal. Well, they've kind of got that over the top of their head, and they're bald. So that, I thought that was a really cool touch. The Minbari are definitely the most fascinating to me next to the Narn. I really think they're interesting. I really have a feeling from what I've been hearing from fans that as the show goes on, the stories get more poignant and have more moral implications. One thing I have to note, I don't know if anyone agrees with me, they always seem to not know when to end the show. Someone says something really insightful or oh, that was really creepy how they just did that. And then you're like, well, surely it will end there. And then you get another shot of Babylon 5 from the outside and they go for another minute or two. I know it's a minor thing, but it always kind of annoys me that they could have this really poignant ending and then they always go like 1 or 2 minutes longer than they should. Another thing I really like in Babylon 5, it's like so massive, so huge that they actually have like an underground, you know, quote unquote there. I think they call it down below or something like that. And basically it's where all the criminals or people who are poor or whatever go down there to live. And basically because the station's so big, they don't have the manpower to clear out places like that. So it's an interesting concept that there could be a station that is a self-contained thing. It's like a big building, but that could be so big that there are places that are uncontrollable by the people who command the ship and the space station, rather. It's definitely a change from, you know, DS9, where it's kind of all orderly and everybody is in their place and, you know, bad things happen, of course, but everything is neat and nice and kind of ordered. They have really amazing guest stars. Most every episode I've seen someone and been like, oh, that's so cool, they got them. The most obvious being Walter Koenig. Everybody knows that he's plays a telepath. I just saw an episode that I liked a lot called Grail with David Warner in it. For those of you who've seen Star Trek 5 and 6, which I still think it's weird that he was in Star Trek 5 and 6. Not a problem, because I love David Warner, but it's just, you'd think someone would be like, well, he was just in Star Trek 5. Won't people think that's weird that he's in Star Trek 6? But they had Judson Scott in And the Sky Full of Stars. That's the episode title. I wasn't just getting all poetic for no reason. Who played Khan's protege, as my husband calls him, from Wrath of Khan. Although I still swear that he's his son. I don't care. Ever since I was little, I always thought that he was his son. And I thought that it was cool because it was kind of mirroring Kirk and his son. See, that would have been cool if they'd done that. But I guess they aren't as smart as me, so they didn't do that. So he's just his dumb protege, which sounds really silly. They had, I think his name was David McCallum. I can't remember his name, but he's the guy who's not Napoleon Solo on The Man from U.N.C.L.E. And they had Robin Curtis, who played Savick in The Search for Spock, and Sarah Douglas, who played, is it Larsa or Ursa? Superman 2. But she's also in SG-1. She's a Tok'ra. And yeah, they have like so many really cool guest stars. So that's definitely something that's really fun to watch for, because you're always wondering who's going to show up. The interior of the ship is another thing I want to talk about real quick. I keep calling a ship. Makes me sound like a moron. The station, rather. It is pretty good. Every once in a while, they have some malfunctions where someone touches something and it wobbles when it's supposed to be solid. But for the most part, it is a really cool design. It's very interesting. Sometimes it looks almost like its design is not very functional. Sometimes it looks like it's just trying to be futuristic, but a lot of times it is an interesting design. It's a little minimalist. One thing I have to say is I love anytime they're in the park. It's a gorgeous set. They have hedges, and the hedges is a labyrinth, and it's like, it's just really gorgeous. One thing I don't know is if it's a really bad matte painting sometimes we're seeing, or if that's supposed to be just what the ceiling looks like. But anyway, one thing I really love is that there's the section where the Vorlons live in a specific area that humans can't enter without using a breathing mask, because you can't breathe the atmosphere that is there. Another thing that I like, no offense Farscape or Battlestar Galactica, but I really like that they just say crap. I really like that they don't feel they have to make up a silly cuss word. And note to Farscape, Frel does not sound like a cuss word. Cuss words are supposed to have hard endings. Frel sounds like something that I would sew onto my pretty pink dress. Battlestar Galactica, at least theirs was frack, and that sounds pretty good. But still. Crap is good enough for anybody. It's good enough for SG-1 and Stargate Atlantis. It's good enough for you, too. Wrapping up, the season finale of season one ended horribly, and I'm totally tortured. Oh, great. Thanks a lot for making it impossible for me not to move on to season two. There's no way. I texted my husband right after. I'm like, yeah, this is great. There's no way I'm not moving on to season two now. Pretty much ends on a major cliffhanger. Everything's awful for everybody. And Delenn is undergoing a metamorphosis, and you're like, what is she gonna look like? She's changing? What does that mean? What's she gonna turn into? It's huge. You know what? I really think I like this show a lot, and I think that I will definitely continue watching this show. It's time we buried the hatchet, that we buried the some kind of geeky weapon reference. I just feel like there's room in my life for DS9 and Babylon 5. Just like how I think people are silly when they think that you can only like Star Trek or Star Wars. You can't like both. And I've liked both ever since I was a little kid. I really like this show. And once I get more into the history of what exactly the beef has been between B5 fans and DS9 fans, I might understand a little bit more the rivalry. And yeah, it sucks if somebody really did steal the idea, which, you know, when I'm watching it, it kind of is obvious that something was going on, but I just feel like it's done now, and both of these shows could be appreciated for what they are, and you could be robbing yourself of enjoyment if you're a DS9 fan and you swore you'd never watch B5, or vice versa. You know, I feel like you could watch it and just appreciate the story for what it is, because you really see when you watch both that they were really putting themselves into this. Probably was just Suits who did the stupid thing, who were dishonest and stole an idea. We shouldn't hold that against either show, I don't think. So what I'm saying is we should all join hands and sing Kumbaya. That's what I'm really saying.
All the cool kids keep enthusiasm rationed, right down to the last explosive ounce. But I'd rather indulge my many passions even if my squaritude's a little too pronounced.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental News, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the at symbol, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y Podcast. That's all one word. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. To meet other anomalies, please join the Anomaly forums. Click on the forum icon at anomalypodcast.com. The theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at marioncall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Oh, say that three times fast.
And I won't ever play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh,
I have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that fair and scrawny was the latest fashion trend. It's chic because I don't require approval in the end.
Music by Kevin.